Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 it's Lean Keys, Real Talk, back with another episode. This is number 111, which is mind-blowing because I remember like it was yesterday when we just did episode 50, and then we did episode 100, so now we're at episode 111. So this is crazy right now. Time flies, and we love it. And time flies when they say time flies when you're having fun and you love what you're doing. So go figure. What's going on, Lee?
Yo, what's up, Keys, man? Glad to be back, man. Went on a little vacay, had a little good time out on the East Coast back here in Denver. You know, we got a lot to talk about, man. Summer's over. Football season is here. The UFC is cranking up. Hey, let's get it.
Yeah, man, that's definitely the first thing you said is definitely relevant right now. Football season is here. People are loving that. You know, pretty much everybody in my inner circle, pretty much everybody I know, everybody I got on Facebook is posting about football right now. So that's pretty much where we at. Even all the people I follow on Twitter who mainly post about UFC, or even a lot of them guys, a lot of those people are posting about football now too, which is all right. They say this is the football is America's favorite sport. What do you think about that?
It's true. It used to be baseball, but you know, baseball is such a slow game. You know, a lot of people really don't get into it, and football is just something everybody can gravitate to. You know, the whole family get around, watch games, you know, Sundays, family get together. Thursdays, you know, you and your boys might go to a bar and watch a Thursday night game. That Monday, you know, normally Monday, I so normally sit down in my basement and watch the Monday night game. So, you know, man, football is just, it's a giant. And it ain't just in America, man, it's a giant across the world. You know, a lot of people like football, man. So, you know, we just give us something else to entertain ourselves. And then come October, you'll have football and basketball. So it's all good.
Yeah, man, this is pretty much, you know, pretty much that time of year when everything starts to kick off and you pretty much have, you know, a game to watch, you know, any day of the week. Because now you have the football is pretty much on all weekend, and they're gonna have, you know, for me out here, it's like we're gonna be having the Celtics are gonna be starting to play, you know, that's gonna be right around the corner, and hockey's gonna be starting too. So like pretty much for everybody, you know, whatever sport you like, this is the time of year for you because it's just something on pretty much almost every day of the week.
Yes, sir.
So, you know, speaking about sports and everything like that, this is definitely something that I, you know, I was even thinking about this at work today, and I was like, damn, this could definitely going to be the first thing that I ask Lee because everybody's been talking about it, you know, especially at my work. They've been talking about it, my coworkers and stuff, and been kind of breaking down the story and things like that. I hadn't looked into it, but, you know, they had been chatting about it today and a bit earlier in the week and such like that. Is you know, first of all, Antonio Brown, you know, that's the basis. So what up with that, bro? Antonio Brown on the Patriots?
Man, the funny part is Saturday morning when it flashed across my phone that the Raiders had released him. I was taking my son to work and he a Patriots fan. I said, you know what? He gonna be with the Patriots by the end of the day. Or at least by Wednesday or next week or this week. And he was like, no, I don't think that's going to happen. I was like, I guarantee you he'd be with the Patriots. Lo and behold, a couple hours later, Antonio Brown signs with the Patriots. I just think he's a great player. But I don't think he's about team success. I think he's more of being an individual commodity and building his brand. And I don't know how that will work with the way the Patriots operate. You know, the Patriots are all about team and being selfless, whereas I think AB is selfish. So But at the same time, I know Belichick and Brady, you know, they want to win Super Bowls, and you win Super Bowls with good players. So I'm quite sure, you know, if you can get an Antonio Brown for what they got him for, then you should go after it. But today the news came out about, you know, him sexually assaulting his former trainer. So I really don't know whether or not he actually going to even play a game with the Patriots. So, you know, the commissioner might step in and sideline him until they do an investigation or whatever. But, you know, sending our best wishes and thoughts to Antonio Brown and his family, and also the young lady that accused him of sexually assaulting her. So hopefully, you know, all parties will end up on their feet after this is over. But, you know, Antonio Brown has just been in the news for a lot of bad things here lately. Sometimes money and building your brand can change you, and I think he's one of the people that that is a prime example of that.
Yeah, you know, that's what a lot of people were saying. I mean, I was in a class with, you know, one of my peers when I was in college. We had a, you know, he's into sports journalism and things like that. We had like a journalism class, and he's like doing the sports writing now and everything like that. And he was like a guy that he pretty much, like you, he knew about everything that was happening, like across, you know, many sports. He knew what, you know, was the recent news, especially with the NFL. I think he actually was like focused in the NFL, and that was like the main area he was reporting on. And I remember, it's funny because we were in class, you know, about, I want to say it was like this time last year. It was one of my final classes I had to take before I graduated, and we were in class this time last year, and he actually predicted, I swear he predicted it, that Antonio Brown was going to go to the Patriots. He was saying it, and he kind of like made an announcement to the class. I don't even know how it come up, but he was like, call me crazy, I think Antonio Brown is going to be on the Patriots by next season. And then I end up hitting him up on Facebook, like when I saw the news, and I was like, bro, I was like, didn't you predict this in our class like last semester? And it seemed like he didn't even really remember it, or he was just trying not to let me gas him up or something like that. He wasn't trying to get gas, but he definitely predicted it. So that was kind of crazy when I saw it. I was like, wow, the world really be moving fast, bro. Like one minute, like someone say something, it sounds like, oh, that'll never happen, or the Patriots won't pick him up, and then it actually come to fruition. But then at the same time, it's like now a lot of people speculate that he's probably not, that he might not even get to play because of like the allegations that have been made against him, and that might really affect it, you know, his, where his career might go now. So it's really crazy, man. I don't know. It's wow, that really, you know, that's like two shakeups like for the league right there.
Yeah, I think the NFL, the NFL is all about protecting their shield and their brand. And right now, Antonio Brown has been a negative to the NFL as far as what he did to get out of Oakland, and as far as him going to the Patriots, and then this situation that came up either yesterday or today. I think it was last night, actually. But, you know, with or without Antonio Brown, there's still going to be games on this weekend and Monday night and starting this Thursday. So the NFL will keep on marching on with or without Antonio Brown. So, you know, I think Antonio needs to look himself in the mirror and really figure out what it is that's going on in his life and try to get that fixed before he even get on the football field. You know, it might be he's going through something and he just don't know how to handle it, and he just do the first thing that comes to mind, be impulsive. So hopefully, like I said, everything works out for him and for the young lady.
Yeah, man, I hope, for the best in that situation, that, you know, everything gets figured out. And, you know, I'm not really I'm not too in the know about the situation because I haven't read up on the story or the allegations or anything like that. But, you know, things like that I tend to take pretty seriously when things like that pop up. But I just hadn't looked at it yet. But, yeah, I hope the best for both parties and that everything gets figured out and that justice be served either way. Maybe he's innocent and maybe he's not. So whichever way, I hope that gets sorted. We got to move on from that because there's some other things that I need to – there's some other things that we need to speak about. And I know this one's really going to get you going, and I can't wait to bring it up right now, is that your boy John Jones made a tweet. I don't know if you saw it, but I think it was about 2 days ago, or if not, it was yesterday. I want to say it was 2 days ago. He made a tweet, and he – I don't know if it was a response to something somebody said, or I want to say he responded to what a fan said. I think somebody tweeted at him, and they asked him when was his next fight. He said, a fan tweeted, and he said, the dude said, he was like, when are we going to get him?
Yeah.
Huh?
The fan tweeted at him, so are we going to get you in December? And then John came back and said, big fight announcement coming up later.
Yeah, but you took away some shock value out of what was said. It was the way he said it that was the excited part. Not only is there a fight, but the fan said, you know, the one that I read was, he might have responded to multiple different people, actually. Because the one I read, the person said, you know, hoping to get announcements soon. Or when can we expect an announcement, John? Like, December is quickly approaching. That's what they said. They were like, they said like November or December, they said, is quickly approaching. And then he quoted it, and then he said, yo, I'm about to pull it up on my phone right now and read you exactly what he said, because kind of like... So the fan said... At Johnny Bones, been quiet, my guy. How's the waters looking? December is coming quick. And then he quoted the tweet, and he said, buckle your seatbelt, my friends. Big, big fight announcement coming soon. Is that the one that – are we talking about the same tweet?
Yeah, we're talking about the same one.
Yeah, so I guess we were pretty much both in saying the same thing, just in a different way. But – I was calling it a square. You know, you were calling it a diamond or something like. Calling it a square, calling it a circle, whatever that. I think calling it a square, calling it a diamond is more fit for what that was than I'm calling it a square. You're calling it a circle because I think that's like a saying, but that don't really make any sense because those are like two different shapes. So like it's kind of obvious. But like a square and a diamond is like more like what we're doing is all you had to really do was like turn. All you had to really do was, like, turn the tweet on its side, and that was what I said, and then you put it, like, straight forward as a square, and that's what you said. So, oh, man. I got, like, a 75 in geometry. I shouldn't be talking about shapes and things like that. I don't even know what I'm doing, bro. I barely passed that class in school, but what's it called? That's why I wasn't a math major. But anyways, that's crazy. The thing that I was talking about with one of my buddies was when I saw that, I screenshotted the tweet and sent it to him because he loves John Jones, you know, probably not as much as you do, but almost, you know, he gets pretty excited for the John Jones fight card. So I had tweeted, I had screenshot and sent it to him, and I was like, oh, man, who do you think, like, you know, John could be talking about? If he were to say, you know, buckle your seats, I wouldn't think that that's for, like, an average fight. Like, if it were going to be, you know, off the rip, I was like, if it were going to be John Jones defending his belt against Blachowicz, if it were to be Jones defending his belt versus Blachowicz, I do not think that he would say that in that way and say, buckle your seatbelt. That is not a buckle your seatbelt type of fight. And we know that's not the fight now anyways because I just saw an announcement that they're doing Jacare is fighting Blachowicz. I think Blachowicz is moving down, or I want to say Jacare is moving up to light heavyweight.
Yeah, he's moving up to light heavyweight.
Yeah, so Jacare is fighting Błachowicz, so that already takes him out of the equation. But even if it was Błachowicz, I really don't think, and I think you would agree, that I don't think John would say buckle your seatbelt for a Jan Błachowicz title defense. I really don't think that's a buckle your seatbelt type of fight, in my opinion. But or really any of these guys. If he would have rematched Smith, I mean, my buddy asked, do you think he could be fighting Smith again? I was like, honestly, he just fought Smith. I really don't think that was really like a rematch-worthy type of fight. I don't think Smith really did. Actually, I didn't even see the fight, so I don't even know. But the way people were talking, it didn't sound like Smith did very well. So I don't think that he'd get a rematch, or the UFC would want to book a rematch for that, especially when it only happened a couple months ago. And then after that, I mean, who's really there? Like, Thiago Santos isn't even in the picture because he's like on a medical suspension for like a while longer. He's not going to be available to fight till the new year. So that can't be. So there's really not many. Rocco just got knocked out. There's really like not many people in the division for him to fight. But, you know, I did want to just point out that I do think it's going to be John fighting Cormier at light heavyweight. I think that's going to be the announcement because if you really think about it, Cormier had said that his last two fights he was going to either be Brock Lesnar and John Jones at light heavyweight. He did say he wanted to go back down to light heavyweight to fight Jones, and that would, in the most ideal situation, be his last fight, and then he would retire because he wants to get that win back. But then, you know, the Brock Lesnar fight fell through. Then he fought Stipe and lost. Okay, so, you know, I suppose he could fight Stipe. No, Cormier could fight Stipe, but I don't know if that's in the cards. I feel like at this point he might just be moving towards retiring and trying to get the belt back from John, and that might be more important. Plus, for John to say, buckle your seatbelts, I think that would be – everyone's been waiting for the next fight with Cormier, especially for him to be at light heavyweight again. So I think that's a buckle your seatbelts kind of fight for the fans. What do you think about that?
I don't think it's going to be DC. I think it's going to be Stipe. I think him fighting DC is not a buckle your seatbelt like news, but I think him versus Stipe is definitely worthy of buckle your seatbelt. I thought it would be Błachowicz, but then he just signed to fight Jacare. I don't see that happening. So if it's DC, it really doesn't amp me up because I feel that John is 2-0 against him, but DC has actually said that he's 0-2 against John, so that fight really doesn't do anything for me. But if it's him versus Stipe, I can get in on that one. I think that would be a hard fight for John. If I was him, I wouldn't take that fight because of Stipe's power at heavyweight, and Stipe isn't a one-trick pony. So it ain't like John could just go in there and prepare to take the one thing away. He would actually have to be ready for anything that Stipe could do to him, or that Stipe could bring to the fight, because Stipe is all around. And I really wouldn't want him in there against a guy that with that much power to start off with. I would probably want him, if he was coming to heavyweight, to probably fight a fringe top 10 guy, maybe somebody ranked between 8 to 10, you know, in that range instead of fighting the champ. If it is DC, I guess a lot of people would be happy, especially fans of DC would be happy that, you know, he's getting another shot to right a wrong or whatever. But me personally, I just don't see DC actually doing anything different to beat John. So, you know, if it happens, good for DC, bad for John, because John has everything to lose, whereas DC has everything to gain. But as far as the UFC fans, I'm quite sure people would get excited. I'm just not one of them.
Um, Yeah, I think that would actually be that'd be extremely exciting if he would have, because I know he actually tweeted back in I want to say it was like May. It was right before we got the announcement that Stipe was getting his rematch with DC, and there was a lot of like speculation. John had tweeted. It was also before we got the announcement of DC Stipe, and before we got the announcement of John versus was John Thiago Santos? Yeah, John and Santos. Both of those haven't been announced yet, so it was kind of up in the air what was going to happen. But John actually tweeted that at Stipe, and he said something like, what would you guys take to see this one? Or, like, would you guys be – he said, like, is 2 months or July 7th, is that enough time? And he tweeted that at Stipe, and people kind of went crazy. So he kind of teased the idea of fighting Stipe earlier this year. So, I mean, I wouldn't doubt that he's interested in that fight. And I had read other reports that, like, his camp was interested in that fight before, but, negotiations didn't work out or whatever like that. But that'd be a really exciting fight. I would like it if that one, if they got that one together. That'd be huge.
Yeah, I think that would be a fight that people actually get up for. But at the same time, it's like if John was to win, then you'll have another champ, somebody that's basically holding up two divisions. So I just don't know how I feel about that. So,
yeah, it is kind of weird because, like, John did say that he's never been one to move up to the other division and to the, like, he's never really been the guy to do that, and he's been fighting light heavyweight, like, his whole career, and he's never been a guy to go up and challenge for a belt, so why would he do it? But then, like, he would come out the woodwork here and just, like, do it, even though, like, he said he's not interested in doing it. So, I mean, I guess from that angle, it'd be kind of a surprise to me if he would have just suddenly move up to heavyweight. But then again, he also said that, like, the UFC would have to get the bag right for him to move up to heavyweight, as in, like, come to me with a couple million or at least $1 million. I don't know how much is his number, but he said they'd have to come to him with a lot of money for him to motivate him to move up to heavyweight. So maybe, Dana came to him with some money, from that ESPN deal. That's probably I'm sure has been raking in tons of money. And that ESPN deal has got Dana's pockets laced, and he's coming to John with a big check to move up to heavyweight. So That'd be crazy. I mean, but at the same time, one dynamic about it is that if he were to fight Stipe, and this is a point, that's another interesting angle here, is that, I like what you said about Stipe having too much power, not to sound like a hater and not saying that John would lose. It's just that is a true thing. I mean, Stipe pretty much knocks out everybody that he fights. I mean, he just knocked out DC when pretty much everybody counted him out to win that rematch, except me. I had Stipe winning, and I believed in my boy. I'm sure you believed in him too. I don't think we did. Oh no, we did do predictions for that one. Yeah, I think we did. I don't know. I think we. I forget if we did.
Yeah, we did. But, yeah, we did predictions.
Yeah. Logic was saying DC would win that one because he beat Stipe so easily the first time. But, it was kind of like my mind says DC, but my heart says Stipe. So that's how it always is. But, I just lost track of what I was saying there. But, yeah, you make a good point with Stipe's power. At the same time, another, dynamic with that fight would be, Stipe's kind of I wouldn't say he's a small heavyweight because he's tall. Just like John is, I feel like in the size department, they'd be kind of more, I don't know if Stipe's reach is off top, but I mean, they might even be almost the same height. I don't even know. I'm not sure how tall, what the difference is there, but I know that for the weight, Stipe, I think, comes in like 220, 230 usually for his fights. And John, I think, has said that he walks around at like around 220, and then he cuts down to 205. So that fight camp would just basically be him not having to cut weight and just getting into a fight camp and just getting, you know, putting muscle on. So that would be interesting to see, you know, where their weights, John would be fighting at his walk around weight versus a guy who Stipe might, that might even be his walk around. I have no idea what Stipe weighs or if he cuts weight or not. I have no idea. But that'd be interesting. Just that, you know, the weight differential there.
Yeah, I think John will probably, I think if he goes to heavyweight, he'll probably fight around 225, 230. I think Stipe came in at right around 235. I know he was under 240, maybe right around 240 for his fight against DC. But I just think getting in there against the probably arguably the best heavyweight champion the UFC has ever had for your first heavyweight fight, I just don't think that's smart. I know Nagano hits hard, but we all know Nagano can't wrestle. So at least if you get hit by Nagano, you got a plan B where you can take him down and maybe dominate him on the mat. Whereas against Stipe, if you take him down to the mat, he can get back up to his feet. You know, he can do some different things. So I wouldn't mind it being Stipe, but I just have my worries about getting in there with such an accomplished heavyweight. I know some people will say, well, you know, he's a champion and he should want to be fight the best. Sometimes you got to fight smart and take your time and pick and choose when you want to do certain things. I bet if Andrade could do it again, I guarantee you, she wouldn't have fought Wally Zhang in Thailand for her fight, her first title defense. So that's just throwing that out there. But we'll see what happens, man.
Yeah. I'm thinking that within the next couple of weeks, I would think in the next couple of weeks we'll get an announcement about that, and I'm really, you know, anxious to see who he's going to be fighting. I'm very anxious to see who he's going to be fighting. You know, I think we both have some really solid, you know, guesses for who that could be. You know, either a DC at light heavyweight, you know, for DC's retirement fight, or take Stipe, you know, for the heavyweight title. You know, that could also be there as well. But, you know, a thing that's interesting about that, too, is that and it just brings the question to my mind is why John was saying that he was, you know, all these things about, like, giving DC, like, too much of an advantage if he were to fight him at heavyweight. Like, you know, why would I fight a guy at his natural weight, you know, and give him the all that power advantage and all that. But shouldn't he feel the same way about Stipe, though? Like, if he were to fight, isn't it the same that's pretty much the same thing as fighting Stipe, if not worse. You know what I mean? Like, DC, you know, Olympic wrestler, fine, but Stipe also has great wrestling, and he has unbelievable power, you know, even though people like to underrate him every time he knocks another heavyweight out. For some reason I don't understand, he has unbelievable power. Like you said, they you know, people want to point to Ngannou and things like that, but who is the only person to beat Ngannou and dominate him?
And Derrick Lewis.
Yeah, but do we really count that Derrick Lewis, though? I mean,
worst fights. That was one of the worst and highly anticipated, hyped-up fights that end up being the most snooze-worthy fight ever.
Yo, snooze is like the perfect word to talk about that fight with. Like, how bad did you describe that fight? Then it was just like the biggest pure snooze, and it was just such a letdown I can't even believe it. Like, how excited I was, I know I was, to, like, see that happen. And, like, the way, like, Derrick Lewis was talking about the fight, like, saying, you know, Ngannou's never fought anybody who's, like, actually tough and all these things like that, like, really just had me amped up to, like, see what they were going to do. And then, oh, man, they just put on the worst fight of all time. Like, that fight, like, all right, Lee has told me many times on this show, you know how we debate about Tyron Woodley. Lee has told me many times on this show that the most boringest fights are Tyron Woodley's fights. But we may have the only fight that he will admit makes Tyron Woodley's fights look exciting, and that was Ngannou versus Derrick Lewis.
But no. I said when Woodley became the champ, his fights became boring. Because when he was on his way up fighting to be a contender, he was actually finishing guys. I mean, you know, he was actually exciting. But then when he became the champ, it seemed like he kind of sort of didn't fight with as much aggression as he did. It was like he was fighting not to lose. So, and I think when people get a – because you've been a big fan of Woodley. I'm going to just use you for an example. You probably like Woodley fights, but when he wasn't a champ, way more than you liked his fights when he was a champ.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you just go back and, you know, off top, just like you could look it up on YouTube. I'm pretty sure they got the fight there, you know, Tyron Woodley versus Josh Koscheck. Like, just watch that. And it's already, it's like night and day. You know, his hunger to win was a lot different. You know, he wasn't just, you know, going in there and trying to fight a defensive fight and, you know, outpoint guys and stuff like that. So it was definitely a lot different, you know, Tyron Woodley then and then become, you know, between then when he was a champion is just definitely a very different thing. So, but, you know, another interesting thing that you point out that, though, is that what Woodley is like, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with John Jones, so we're just going to let that one ride off into the sunset for a minute, and we'll check back with that at a later time. But, you know, with Woodley, the funny thing was is that I actually saw some stuff, and they were saying that they were trying to get your boy Kamaru Usman, or Usman, versus Colby Covington at Madison Square Garden. And I'm hearing that the negotiations completely and utterly fell through and the fight is off the table. And now the fight, I don't even think there's any word of the fight happening now or Usman making a title defense at all. Because now you can't even give the title defense to Jorge Masvidal because a lot of people said they thought that Usman was going to fight Masvidal for the title instead of Covington. But then now Masvidal is fighting Nate Diaz. So now Usman's probably not going to fight for the rest of the – I mean, I can't even see him fighting for the rest of the year now. What do you think about that?
I think he fights Leon Edwards. I think he ended up fighting Leon Edwards. The reason that the Covington-Usman fight fell through is strictly because of Colby Covington. Colby Covington felt that – the UFC disrespected him with the negotiations. Colby Covington felt like he was going in there like Dustin Poirier did against Khabib, champ against champ. Colby, you might not know this, but when you turn down the fight against Tyron Woodley, the UFC stripped you of that title. So basically you're not a champ. You are basically a contender, a challenger. So you will not get paid as if it were a champ versus champ fight. So the UFC moved on. I think they're going to probably make Usman versus Edwards. So I think the people will probably get that fight. Because, you know, I was at the point where I was about to say, if Usman don't agree to a fight, strip him of the belt and let's keep it moving. We can't keep having guys turning down fights, you know, trying to pick their own fights and stuff like that. We can't have that in the UFC because then the UFC becomes boxing and nobody wants the UFC to become boxing. But the Nate Diaz versus Masvidal fight for the baddest motherfucker title, that fight, I'm glad it's the main event because I just don't think if they both come in there at the top of their game, that three rounds won't do it. I think we'll all be craving for a five-round fight. And if everything goes according to plan, hopefully we get a five-round fight between Masvidal and Diaz. Diaz actually looked pretty good against Pettis, which I thought he would. I thought he would be rusty, but I thought he would start to get it together probably towards the end of the first round. But he proved me wrong. And I think Masvidal coming off an exciting win over Ben Askren, I think this is the fight that the fans want to see. And I think it was the right fight to be the headliner for MSG if you couldn't get a title fight. So I'm glad the UFC signed it. They moved quick on it because the fans were just – after Nate beat Pettis and he said what he said in the post-fight interview, the fans and especially the ones on Twitter, that's all – you just see memes popping up of Nate versus Masvidal, you know. He's a gangster, but he's not a West Coast gangster. So, you know, it was good that the UFC put that fight together so fast, and I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, that's going to be an unbelievable fight. You know, I'm really stuck. That card just looks so crazy. Like, they did that fight, and they got – now they just announced, you know, they got Stephen Wonderboy Thompson's fighting Vicente Luque, who just had a crazy fight with Mike Perry that I missed, which I'm, like, pissed about. Because, like, from what I can see, what I heard, it was just, like, a crazy, crazy fight. Mike Perry, like, broke his nose off, like, Luck's knee and things like this. So that's a savage fight. And now Luck is fighting Wonderboy. Wonderboy, you know, puts on some savage fights. He has. You know, I know you're going to say, yeah, boring fights. I know you're going to say, yeah, boring fights with Willie, but, you know, he's had some savage fights prior to that. And, you know, you got the Johnny Walkers on that card. But you know what I actually wanted to ask you about that before I get lost into the MSG land and all this? MSG is an unbelievable card. If you haven't seen, like, the card, like, the main card is absolutely stacked. You got to go look it up right now. Right now, right now. Right now. All right, so what I want to ask you about is, did you see Khabib versus Dustin Poirier?
Yes.
What is your assessment of that fight?
The fight went according just like I said in my article that I wrote about breaking the fight down. Dustin Poirier, when you look at the two fights against Eddie Alvarez, when Eddie took him down, he couldn't get up. So the only chance he had of winning that fight is what he did in the second round. He had to win the striking game while they were on their feet. And as soon as he tagged Khabib, what did Khabib do? Took him down. I mean, Poirier did get the choke in, but once he released it, the fight was over, man, because basically he was gassed after that. And I just – it was something that you tweeted out the other day that you said that Khabib probably lose to somebody that can wrestle via submission. In a way, that's kind of true. But I think he can lose to a guy that ain't one-dimensional. If you look at everybody he done fought, basically they all been one-dimensional, man. Barboza, one-dimensional. Conor, one-dimensional. Poirier, one-dimensional. Arquette, I wouldn't say he was one-dimensional, but he's basically known for his striking. And he was basically taking a fight on very, very short notice. So I just don't see somebody that's one-dimensional beating him. We already know that they're going to make the Ferguson versus Khabib fight, which I'm gonna pray every night that this fight actually happens. Because this is, and my man Key's word, the most cursed fight in the UFC. Hopefully we get it early in 2020. I think it'll be a great fight. hopefully Tony signs it, because I'm quite sure that Dana is clamoring to get Connor in there with Khabib, which I don't want to see again, because I just don't think Connor is about fighting anymore. I think he's more about being a celebrity and making money, and I just don't think fighting is something that's in his heart anymore. So hopefully Tony Ferguson will go ahead and sign a contract and we'll get that fight on and popping. But with that being said, Dustin, he just didn't do anything that I thought he should do, man. He should have read my article.
Man.
Should have read my article, dog.
Man, that's a fact. Dustin Poirier, bro, you should have read Lee's article. And, you know, I know you're listening right now and you're thinking, damn, if only I had paid attention to the scrap news and I read Lee's article, I would have had the game plan to beat Khabib. But I done goofed. So you done goofed. And the thing is there's so many moments on this show where there's been a fight and we do a breakdown of the fight. I ask you your take on the fight, and then you end up saying, he should have read my article. I feel like this. I don't think that's the first time that you said that. I got, you know, the kind of deja vu moment when you said it. I feel like there's been a couple of times you said that, and it's true. You be having some gems low key in people's sleep. Leave you having some gems, people. You got to be reading his articles. Why do you think I always repost his articles for you guys and tell you? You need the lowdown on this. Get caught up on the content.
Yeah, man. I really did on that, on breaking, because when I saw that it was available, you know, I wasn't gonna write about it because I had wrote an article on how can Dustin pull out the upset against Khabib, but that was just a one sided way. So then when I broke the one down about, you know, how what would it take for both of them to win, you know, I thought Dustin just would try to do some things different and fight at distance. And, you know, man, he didn't throw I don't think he threw, like, one meaningful leg kick the whole fight. People don't leg kick Khabib. I just don't understand why you won't leg kick him. If you leg kick him, you know, it makes him think. You know, you got to have him thinking versus having him fighting. And I thought one thing that Khabib did against Dustin was, he knew that Dustin was going to throw punches. So what did he do? Slip the punch and go for the takedown every time. So, and I also wrote this, that if Khabib could ever develop a meaningful jab, what I mean by a meaningful jab, it's a jab that his opponents will have to respect because he's stinging them with it. If he could ever develop that, just imagine him faking a jab, and his opponent goes on the defense, and next thing you know, you're getting slammed into the mat. He'd be unbeatable, man, if he could come up with a meaningful jab.
You said so that jab would make Khabib an unstoppable fighter.
Yep.
Well, you know, one thing that I could point out about it is that, you know, Poirier did throw a couple leg kicks early on in the fight, but I don't remember. He definitely abandoned it. I think the last time, at least offhand, the last time I remember seeing him throw a leg kick, because I remember, you know, my heart kind of like fell into my throat or whatever, like my stomach dropped when I seen it, because it was like the last leg kick Poirier tried to throw. I remember seeing Khabib, he caught it. And then it was like Dustin kind of like tried to catch his balance on the other leg because Khabib was trying to catch the leg and take him down. But Dustin was trying to like bounce back on the other foot and like, you know, wiggle his foot out of there. And he actually did, and he escaped. He didn't get taken down, but I think he got shook by that moment because, you know, I feel like his camp might have told him, like, don't get caught with your leg. Like, don't let him catch your legs when you're like trying to throw leg kicks. And then once it actually happened, he was like scared to do it again. I don't know if that's what happened in his mind. I have no idea, but just from what I saw, Khabib caught his leg, and then after that, I don't remember him throwing more. Dustin did not throw more leg kicks after that, so that could have happened.
But that leg kick that he threw it towards the body. No, don't kick Khabib in the body. Kick him in the leg. That's why we say leg kick. Because if you kick him in the body, guess what? He's going to do exactly what you said. He's going to catch your leg, and 9 times out of 10, he's going to drive you onto the mat. Poirier did scramble out of that one, but he just threw the kick in the wrong place. Keep the kicks low. Don't kick for the body. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, there's some points there that they could have been running with. I think they needed you to be, you know, bring the Octagon side, you know, with Poirier's camp to be able to explain it, because they were having some problems. I don't know what was the game plan that they had, but it definitely backfired, and it didn't really look like Poirier got much of anything going in the fight. Besides that, you know, late in the fight, right before he actually got finished himself, he had the locked in the guillotine choke, which I believe was actually tight. And Khabib actually did an interview and told, I think it was an interview with MMAfighting.com, and he told them that it was tight and that he was almost out from it, but he escaped it. So given he escaped it, but that's so you, I guess it holds less weight, but because he didn't pull it off, but it was locked in. And the people I was with when we were watching it, they were saying it wasn't locked in. I was like, guys, it's locked in. Look at Poirier's legs. He's wrapping his legs around Khabib's back, so Khabib can't, you know, Khabib couldn't get out of it, but he kept motioning, you know, backwards and eventually pulled himself out. Dustin couldn't keep control, so he lost control of the submission, but it was in. That was the only moment that he had, and then there was at one point, I don't know what round, but Dustin had landed like a flurry of punches, and you just saw Khabib,
second.
Like in this moment. Okay, second round, like, you remember he landed the flurry of punches, and you just seen Khabib, he looked like he didn't know what to do. Like, he was like, Khabib was like rushing backwards, and his arms were like flailing everywhere. Like, Khabib didn't even know like how to respond to it. And I think he got hit with a good shot, Khabib. I'm not saying he was rocked, but I think he did get hit with a good shot, you know, in the beginning of it. Not, you know, afterwards, Dustin wasn't landing anymore, but I think Khabib was trying to evade danger. He was kind of flailing his arms, and he didn't shoot low or anything like that. He was just like, looked like he didn't know how to deal with it. I mean, he escaped it, but those are the only two moments where it looked like Dustin was getting something going. Everything else besides then, he really didn't have control of the fight.
Yeah, but you know, man, it's like what I always say, and you'll attest to this. When your plan A ain't working, what's your plan B and plan C? There are so many fighters in the UFC, if their plan A doesn't work, they don't have a plan B or a plan C. And to me, that's more on the coaches and the trainers than it is on the fighter. You should have your fighter ready to make adjustments during the fight. Your fighter should be able to make adjustments during the fight. Just like when Stipe fought DC, what was the adjustment that his trainer said? Body shots. Go to the body. When Stipe started going to the body, he started hurting DC. And he ended up winning the fight because of the body shots. It's just so many fighters, man, that when they get in the octagon, you got to have a fallback plan. You just can't say, I'm a striker, and striker is going to get me through the fight. No, because when you fighting a guy that can do it all, guess what? He ain't going to stand up and let you punch him in the face for three to five rounds. That's what he's going to do. He's going to drive you onto the mat. So I wish more guys and more trainers and coaches would have their fighters prepared with plan A, plan B, and plan C. That's just something that we don't see a lot. We see it from like, you know, good fighters, like your Joneses, your Cormiers, your Stipes, Khabib. I want to say Khabib because Khabib's style is always the same, you know. You know, some of the greater fighters will always got a fallback plan. So I would just rather see more guys being willing and able to change their game plan up according to how the fight is going.
You actually make a really good point. I mean, not that you haven't said that. Like you've been preaching that for a while on this show. So I think a lot of fighters need to stop tuning into our show so they can figure out what they got to do in the next fight. But Levy really having the facts, people. You need to start listening to Lee because he's been saying this stuff for a long time, and a lot of you guys would be able to save face if you just listen to this man. But no, that you bring up about Stipe changing his game plan, and I think it was round three versus in the DC rematch. You know, I was actually watching that by myself at the time. I watched the DC Stipe 2 by myself, and I was at the bar, man. I was jumping up and down and everything. I was clapping. I was like, "Let's go!" How excited I was, man, seeing Stipe going to the body. DC was, you could tell he was getting uncomfortable from it. He didn't like it. Stipe was landing clean to the body, and that you brought that up was, I'm glad you brought that up, because that seemed like to me like some real, like, that was like some true boxing, that was like some true boxing shit right there. I feel like, who was that in the corner, Freddie Roach?
I don't know whether that was Freddie Roach. I don't know whether that was Freddie Roach, but the thing was, his corner noticed it, and they kept driving the point home to Stipe, dig the body, dig the body, dig to the body. And Stipe finally started doing it, and it turned the fight into his advantage. And, you know, man, as fans, you know, a lot of us like certain fighters. You know, we like their fighting style, and, you know, we might like some of their antics and stuff like that. But I think being what guys pay their trainers, and they coaches, I think if you pay your coaches and your trainers what they pay them, you shouldn't be a one-dimensional fighter. You should get more bang for your buck, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think so you're trying to say that for what the trainers get paid, that the fighters should be looking a lot better, not just looking like a plan A fighter?
Yes.
I actually never even looked into that or anything. What's the pay like for the trainers? I have no idea.
Actually, it was on, I want to say we was talking about it the other day on our group chat for the scrap, and somebody posted a picture of it. I'm trying to pull it up now. And I was just like, and that's when I was like, fighters need to unionize. And it's kind of crazy because when me and you talk about fighters and what they get paid, man, Khabib got $6 million and Poirier got $200,000 or something like that, maybe close to $300,000. Man, that's ridiculous, dog.
But did anybody really confirm that he made $6 million? I mean, I saw that, but the source who posted it, I never even heard of them before, and that was the only post that I even saw from it. I never saw Ariel Helwani say that Khabib made $6 million purse, or, you know, Bokamoto never said Khabib made $6 million purse. Like, guys who are legit reporters, I never saw them say anything about a $6 million purse for Khabib. I don't know if that was official.
Yeah, I want to say somebody posted a picture from MMA Netherlands, and they had Khabib made $6 million, Dustin made $290,000, Curtis Blaze made $165,000, and the guy Curtis Blaze beat made $135,000. I don't know whether or not that's confirmed, But I'm trying to find the tweet where it says how much the guys pay their trainers. But it was a tweet that came out the other day, and I was just like, I was floored by it. I was like, man, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, if it was a, I mean, if it were true and it was, if Khabib got paid $6 million, then man, I mean that's pretty crazy because I mean not saying crazy that like it couldn't happen because like I do think he could get paid that much, but like the thing about it is just like for the UFC though, like I mean I think the UFC could do it, but it's just like. It's not usual that they would pay a fighter that much. I know they have the money to do it, but they don't. And it's like, when have you ever seen a fighter make that much money for a UFC fight? I mean, I'm pretty sure McGregor never even made $6 million for a UFC fight. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I'm not right. You know, I'm not always right. I don't know. I could be wrong, but I never even heard McGregor or none of these, you know, none of these stars or Rousey or nothing making $6 million. I mean, I know. I mean, I heard McGregor making like $2 million, maybe $3 million. I think McGregor might have made $3 million. I thought they said he made $3 million for his purse for the Khabib fight. Maybe that was the second DS. I don't even know. But I never heard of nobody making $6 million. So if that happened, that's the biggest payday that the UFC has ever given out. And I just would think that like Dana White or somebody would have like there would have been an official like. Press release about it or something like that. Like, you know, Ariel Helwani would say the UFC, you know, gives out its biggest payday in company history. Khabib Nurmagomedov, $6 million for UFC 242 title defense. Like, you would think you would see something like that. So maybe in the next couple of weeks, you know, some of those reporters will start to figure out what the purses were, the official purse, and we'll find out. But either way, I mean, you're definitely right about, like, the pay discrepancy on the main card. I mean, even just going from you know, Khabib's purse for like his last fight, then go to the co-main event for that card, then look at what, you know, those two guys made, then go to the next fight, you know, which was probably the Derek Lewis fight, you know, look what Derek Lewis and Volkov made, which was probably like 100K each or something like that. Like the differential that the guys get, the jump of pay that the guys make is very questionable because some of the best fighters the UFC has are not getting paid. I mean, look at Curtis Blaydes. He completely dominated. What did you say? He made like 150,000? 100 and not even 200. What did he make?
He made 195,000.
Yeah, see, man, I don't know. I mean, that – I don't know. I mean, Curtis Blaydes is like one of the best – you know, he's arguably the best heavyweight. I mean, he lost to Ngannou twice, so I mean, if you want to put Ngannou in front of him, that's understandable. But really, who else in the heavyweight division is going to beat Curtis Blaydes right now? I mean, he hasn't lost to anybody else. I feel like his wrestling is extremely dominant, and he doesn't just like, you know, play around with guys. He actually finishes fights. If not, he's always moving. He's always transitioning. He's always bringing action. He's throwing knees or he's throwing punches. Curtis Blaydes destroys people. You know, that they're just putting that simply. And he's my favorite heavyweight. I just wish they'd be paying these guys more, a lot of the guys.
All right. So I found the tweet. Actually, our boy Evan actually retweeted it. He actually used Miles Jury. He actually used Miles Jury payout, which, you know, it actually looks worse than what it is because Miles Jury really don't make – he's not a main event type of fighter. So I guess Miles Jury actually got $20,000 for his last fight. And his expenses after – his expenses ended up being $14,500. So basically he made $5,000 for winning that fight. So his expenses were his gym and team got $2,000, his management got $4,000, which is kind of crazy. The management should actually be getting $2,000, and the gym probably should have got $4,000. Then he got hit with his taxes. Then he had his medicals. Coaching was $1,000, and then he had miscellaneous expenses were $1,000. So Miles Jury not even a major. He's not even a major player in the UFC, and these are his expenses. Imagine what John, Stipe, DC, you know, the top guys are paying. Probably instead of gym and team being $2,000, that's probably more in the range of $5,000. Part of the management is probably around $5,000. And, you know, the taxes go up. You know, coaching probably instead of being $1,000, probably around $3,000, maybe between $3,000 to $5,000. So it's kind of crazy what the fighters pay out to the gym and the coaches and stuff like that just for them not to be a well-rounded fighter. If I'm paying you this much money, then I should be getting a return on my investment by being a well-rounded fighter.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, just look at John Jones, like, paying Jackson Wink Gym and, like, his team over there. They really, like, do a lot of groundwork for his title defenses. I mean, he was talking about it before his fight with, I think it was before the Anthony Smith fight. He did an interview, and he was saying, you know, how much work his team has done, not just, you know, in training and things like that, but, like, watching tape and analyzing his opponent and figuring out exactly the game plan that they were going to go with and, you know, how many hours of tape they watched and how much, you know, analysis they did and things like that. You know, and just thinking about that is like, wow, like, you know, it's a lot. It's, for people like that, you can see where it pays off. Because Jones, he always has tricks up his sleeve and is able to switch up in the moment. He could do a little bit of everything. So, like you said, it would be, you know, it'd be, fighters should get more of that, you know, but they don't. And Jackson Wink, I can imagine how much money you got to pay them. I mean, they're widely regarded as, like, the best gym there is. So, I mean,
yes.
There's some other, I mean, American Top Team, like, there's some other gyms. Like, Jackson Wink, I feel like, is, like, a top five, arguably top three MMA gym in the world. I mean, I don't hear about, or at least in North America. I mean, definitely, like, a top three gym that's located in North America. I know there's some international gyms that are really good, too. You know, I even found out the other day that while I was writing one of my articles that, you know, the Korean Zombie actually has his own fight gym.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the Korean Zombie got his own fight gym called Korean Zombie MMA. He's got a whole bunch of Korean zombies that he's training. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, man. Because I was the ranking, I would probably say American Top Team is probably the number one gym. And I'll probably say Wink John is number two. Then I might throw Team Alpha Man in there as number three. And then maybe the Black Zillions at number four. You know, that's probably how I would rank them at this point in time, because those are the ones I know off the top of my head. And then, you know,
what about GSP's gym?
I don't know the name of it.
I forget it, but GSP's gym, if you heard it, you probably recognize it. I forgot. A lot of fighters training there. Actually, Kevin Lee actually just is training at GSP's gym now, too.
I mean, you know, GSP, I would have to find out what's the name of his gym and what fighters fight under his gym's name, because I probably just don't know a fighter that's fighting under his gym's name. But I know he did corner somebody recently in a fight, and that person actually won. So, you know, we'll just have to see how many fighters that fight under his gym's name.
Oh, yeah, it's called TriStar Gym.
Okay, I never heard of that. I had to do some homework on
Kevin
that.
Kevin Lee's training over there now, so I'm interested to see how Kevin Lee looks in his next fight after having, you know, some of those guys over there, because there's, like, some really good guys, you know, Rory McDonald. And Rory McDonald's one of the best fighters in the world, in my opinion. At least one of the best welterweights.
Yeah, I thought he should have never left the UFC. I thought he should have stayed in the UFC. I think fighting in Bellator, to me, is just a step down in competition, in my opinion. And I think you get your best fights and your best competition in the UFC.
I mean, and I'd like to see Rory come back eventually and fight some of these welterweights now. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing him versus some of these guys. I wouldn't mind seeing him, you know, maybe rematch Wonderboy or fight, you know, Leon Edwards. Maybe Leon Edwards or actually Ponzinibbio. I would like to actually see Rory McDonald fight Santiago Ponzinibbio. That'd be a fight that, or actually have Rory, you know, fight Woodley again. But we already seen that one, so. And we already seen the Wonderboy fight, but I actually really like to see him versus Ponzinibbio. That'd be a fight that I'd want to see. Rory versus Ponzinibbio just sounds like pure violence.
And actually, I think if we don't get Leon Edwards versus Usman, I wouldn't mind Leon Edwards versus Woodley. I think that'd be a hell of a fight. I think that fight may bring back the old Woodley, the pre-championship Woodley, because I think Edwards is one of those guys that's underrated, but when you watch him fight, you see that he actually is very skillful.
Yeah, that's a really interesting take right there, because I haven't even thought much about that. How's Woodley going to be different, you know, not as a champion and where he's sat out for a minute now? He's been sitting out for like 6 months or so, and I haven't even heard of him in a fight. I mean, he was supposed to have the Robbie Lawler fight, but it didn't happen, and I haven't heard anything about him coming back anytime soon. So I'm interested to see what he looks like upon returning, you know, non-champion, sat out for almost a year or something like that by the time he comes back. But, I think we definitely just covered a whole bunch of stuff that there's a lot of stuff I wanted to get to, a lot of stuff that I was able to ask you, questions I had in the queue that I was dying to ask you. So that was great. And we'll probably kick it off right there, probably cut it off right there, save it for next time. This is a great episode. Definitely we'll be coming back with some more great conversation, you know, more content, more announcements, more sport talk, more real talk. No relationship advice. Next time on, you know what it is. We're bringing that back. We're bringing that back, bro. The no relationship advice. I think that is a key part of our show. Is the no relationship advice. So we need to really drive that.
We don't do that. This ain't Dr. Phil. This ain't Dr. Phil or Love Connection. We don't do that on this show.
Yo, that's a fact. So I think we really need to drive that point home in the coming shows to just remind people that they can't come on here and this is not have the therapy hour. This is not the therapy hour. We are doing real talk as always. We're doing fight talk. We're doing sports talk, and we're breaking down all the news that you want to hear. So every time on Lean Keys Real Talk, episode 111 has been amazing. And it's really felt good to be back and breaking it down with you on here, Lee. I'm glad you made it back from the Cayman Islands on your dolphin tour to come back and kick it with your boy.
You know what? I wish my vacations were as dope as you make them out to be when I ain't here. But, I was in South Carolina. I went to South Carolina. One of my military buddies retired after doing 30 years. So I went to go see his retirement. Then I went home to visit my family for a couple of days, and then went down to South Carolina to see my wife's family for a couple of days, and then we came back to Denver. So it was fun, and I'm glad to be back. And I'm glad to be back on this show, talking to the people, me and you breaking stuff down, giving them the knowledge they need, in this UFC MMA Bellator game. So, we back. 111. Put it in the books.
Definitely, definitely. You know, we're going to try to get back on our regular schedule here. We've usually been trying to, you know, we were trying to do Wednesday nights during the summer. You know, we kicked it off on a Wednesday night tonight, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, 6:30 Mountain time. So we're going to try to get back to that schedule that we were doing, try to get back on Wednesday nights. If we can't do them, then we'll probably try and do them on Thursday nights. But the, you know, plan A every time is to go for Wednesday nights. So, you know, you can catch us on Wednesday nights, if not Thursday nights. But we're going to try to get back once a week again and get the train back rolling, because we love doing our show, Lean Keys Real Talk, bringing y'all everything you want to hear. So real talk always, you know, I always say stay positive, love each other, pay it forward. You know, all my mottos that I like to say. And Lee, the floor is yours. Take us home.
Yeah, man. You know, check me and Keys out on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter. Check our stuff, our writings out on the Scrap News. Me and Keys. You know, we everywhere with this MMA stuff, promoting the good news. You know, giving you what you need to know. Like and always, love, live, laugh. You know, live your life. Tell somebody you love them every day, and make sure you live your life to the fullest. With that being said, Lee and Keys out. Peace.